Here's a finding that should bother you if you've been paying attention to AI agents over the last 2 years. Take a strong language model agent, the kind that can search the web, visit pages, reason for hundreds of steps on a hard question. Spawn 5 copies of it. Point all 5 at the same problem. What do you get? In almost every published setup, you get 5 times the compute bill and roughly 1 agent's worth of capability. The runs don't see each other. They explore in parallel. And at the end, you vote, or pick the best, or merge. But during the actual search, each one is alone.
Right, and that's not an accident. It's the whole point of best of N sampling. Independence is what makes the statistics work. If the runs influence each other, you lose the diversity that justifies running 5 in the first place.
Exactly. So this paper, which went up on Archive on May 23rd, 2026, 3 days before we're recording this, pokes at that orthodoxy. Quick note before we go further. What you're hearing is AI generated. I'm Juniper, that's Eric, and we're both AI voices from 11 Labs. The script was written by Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7, and the show is produced independently. No affiliation with Anthropic or 11 Labs. The paper is called Agent Fugue, Agent Scaling for Long Horizon Tasks Through Collective Reasoning, out of Renmin University and the Beijing Academy of Artificial Intelligence. And the reason it pokes at the orthodoxy is that the authors think for sufficiently hard tasks, independence is wasteful. Because most of those independent samples are equally wrong.
And sufficiently hard is doing real work in that sentence. The benchmarks they care about are things like browse comp. Find the 19th century Shanghai store that satisfies these 8 constraints. The search space is enormous. Any single trajectory is going to wander into the wrong corner. So the question isn't, which of my 5 wandering agents got lucky? The question is, whether the dead ends one agent hits could become shortcuts for the next.
And the framing they reach for, which is genuinely lovely, is the Baroque fugue. In a fugue, multiple musical voices enter one after another, each playing their own line. They stay distinct, you can hear them as separate, but they pick up and develop themes from each other. Nobody takes over, nobody synchronizes, the voices weave. That's the design target. Not a debate, not a planner dispatching subtasks, parallel trajectories that stay independent but cross-pollinate at moments of their own choosing.
So, how does that actually work? Because agents that selectively share partial progress can mean a lot of different things, and most of them collapse into either dump everything on everyone or nobody reads anything.
Right. Here's the picture. Imagine 3 agents starting the same hard search puzzle. Each one is running its own loop. Think, search, visit a page, observe, think again. That's the standard template called React, and it's the substrate underneath every system the paper compares against. Now, every agent has a working context, basically a scratch pad where the entire transcript of their thinking and all their tool results accumulates. And that scratch pad has a ceiling. 64,000 tokens in this setup. You hit that, you're out of room. So here's the move. When any agent's scratch pad fills up, a separate model, they call it the hub, steps in. It reads the chunk of work that just happened, and it writes a structured note. Something like, considered candidates XYZ. Ruled out X because it was founded too late. Ruled out Y because wrong location. Currently exploring Eastern Shanghai foreign cloth stores. Then it stores the raw episode in an archive, clears the agent's scratch pad back down, and replaces all that bulk with just the note.
So the compression does double duty. The agent gets its working memory back, and the team gets a readable artifact.
That's the trick. Single agent memory systems have been compressing for years, for themselves. Agent Fugue compresses for teammates. Same operation, 2 purposes.
And the reading side?
The reading side is the other clever bit. Agents don't get teammate notes broadcast at them. What they see is a course list. 1 line per teammate episode, like, Agent 1 has been working on candidate set X. That's it. cheap awareness. If something on that list looks relevant, the agent can issue what's basically a memory call. Give me Agent 1's page 2. I'm looking for the founder from Canton connection. And the hub rereads the raw archived episode through the lens of that specific question and returns a focused readout.
Two-level retrieval. Cheap to be aware, expensive to actually pull. That's the right design. Because if you just broadcasted everyone's notes into everyone's context, you'd either drown the signal or, worse, you'd collapse the diversity. Every agent would start steering toward the same hypothesis.
Right. The whole reason you wanted multiple agents was to explore different corners. If the communication mechanism herds them, you've destroyed the thing you were trying to scale.
Okay, so that's the architecture. But here's the part that, for me, is where the actual contribution lives. The hub isn't a script. It's not a template. It's a small language model, a separate one, and they train it. And they only train it.
Say more about that, because I think that's the move that lets the system get good rather than just plausible.
So they take the hub, they start it from a Qwen backbone, they fine-tune it on examples of good notes and good readouts, and then they hit it with reinforcement learning. They use a fairly standard RL recipe. Listeners don't need the acronym. But here's what matters. They run the whole multi-agent system, the agents and the hub, on real tasks. They sample several candidate hub outputs for the same situation. They let each version play out all the way through the task. They see which version led to the team finding the right answer faster. And they reinforce the hub outputs that produced successful, shorter trajectories. But, and this is the part, they freeze the agents. The reasoning models don't update. Only the hub's weights move.
So all the learning pressure lands on the communication layer.
All of it. Which means the hub isn't being trained to summarize well, which is a fuzzy, supervised signal. It's being trained to produce notes and readouts that make the team finish faster and more correctly. That's a much sharper signal. And it makes the hub, in principle, a plug-in. You could imagine attaching it to a different agent backbone without retraining anything else.
There's an analogy I keep coming back to here. If you have two domain experts who each already speak their own technical language fluently, you don't retrain the experts to collaborate. You train a translator. Someone who learns which parts of each expert's work are worth passing on and how to frame it so it lands for the other one. The hub is the translator. The agents already know how to do their job.
That's the cleanest way to put it. And it explains why this is interesting beyond the headline numbers. Because it suggests there's a whole optimization target that's been sitting there untouched. Everyone's been making the experts stronger. Nobody's been training the translator.
Okay, so what happens when you turn this thing on?
This is the part where the empirics get genuinely interesting. They run on three benchmarks: browse comp for depth, wide search for breadth, and HLE for expert reasoning. And they hold everything fixed across systems. Same backbone, same tools, same total interaction budget, same context window. So whatever differences come out have to be from coordination, not capability. Headline number. On browse comp, with one of the strong backbones, Agent Fugue scores around 71. And the paper highlights a 15-point gap over one of the strongest multi-agent baselines, Kimmy's Swarm system, with a meta-agent dispatching specialized workers, which scores around 56. 15 points. Same model. Different way of talking.
15 points from changing the coordination layer.
And it shows up across the board. Average across all three benchmarks, 65 versus 58. Now, on the breadth benchmark, wide search, the gap is small, because that benchmark is already near saturated. But on the hard reasoning benchmark, HLE, it's another 5.5 points. The gains are real, and they're not concentrated in one task type.
And the scaling story?
The scaling story is the thing that makes this feel like a real result, and not just a clever architecture. They take a single backbone and run it with one agent, two agents, 3, 5, 8, all connected through the hub. per agent accuracy goes from about 36% at n equals 1 to about 58% at n equals 5. Same model. The only thing that changed is how many peers it has, and that they're sharing notes through this hub.
So each individual agent gets better as the team grows.
Each individual agent, which is the whole point of the scaling out as a capability access claim. You're not just collecting more samples and voting. The agents themselves are operating more capably because they have access to the team's collective failure map.
And there's this lovely secondary finding hiding in there about what the agents actually do differently as the team grows.
Yeah, this one I love. As you go from one agent to eight, the average number of raw web searches per agent drops from about 10 to 7. Page visits drop from 30 to 20. So each agent is doing less direct browsing. But the number of memory calls per question, agents pulling teammate notes through the hub, climbs from less than 1 to about 2.6.
So the work shifts.
The work shifts. From solo exploration towards structured sharing. The system isn't just running more agents in parallel and merging at the end. The individual agents are reorganizing their behavior, leaning less on their own browsing, leaning more on what teammates have already mapped.
Eric, this is the moment in the paper where I think the case study earns its keep. Because it's one thing to say agents pulled teammate notes, and another to see what was actually in those notes. Can I walk through the Shanghai store puzzle?
Please.
Okay. The question is, one of these browse comp style monsters, find a 19th century Shanghai store that satisfies 8 specific constraints. Founding period, location within Shanghai, what it sold, who the founder was, where the founder came from. 3 agents are working on this. Agent 0 is mid-search, exploring some candidates. Agent 1 has hit context budget, gotten its work compressed by the hub, and is continuing in another direction. At some point, Agent 0 looks at the list of teammate notes, sees that Agent 1 has been digging into the relevant candidate set, and issues a memory call. And what comes back is not an answer.
What comes back?
A failure map. Agent 1 had examined 6 candidate stores. Each one had been rejected for a specific reason. Founded too late, wrong part of the city, wrong product category, founder from the wrong region. And the synthesized readout to Agent 0 said, in effect, I've ruled out these 6. The store remains unidentified, and the direction that hasn't been explored is Eastern Shanghai Foreign Cloth Stores, founded by a Cantonese merchant. Agent 0 took that direction. Found the answer. Da Feng, founded 1853. The other 2 agents got it wrong.
That's exactly the regime where this kind of system should beat independent sampling.
Right. The shared memory transmitted process state, not answer content. It told Agent 0 not where the answer was, but where it definitely wasn't. And that's the asymmetric value of communication during exploration. You don't have to share the right answer to be useful. You just have to share what you've already burned.
Okay, but Juniper, I think we have to do the other case study because this is the paper's most honest moment, and it complicates everything we just said.
Go ahead.
There's a question in the test set about a place called Fort Henry. 8 conjoined constraints again. The team makes 10 memory calls on this question, among the highest of any question in the benchmark. So the agents are leaning hard on shared notes. The hub, doing its job correctly, identifies a candidate, Central State Farm, and notes accurately that this candidate satisfies criteria 5 and 6, but fails criteria 7 and 8. The city population is wrong. The growth pattern is wrong. The hub records this faithfully.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. But then the hub also keeps reinforcing, across multiple notes, multiple readouts, that this candidate is the only clearly confirmed match for criteria 5 and 6. Because no other father was on the faculty candidate ever turns up. That framing keeps echoing forward. The candidate's local uniqueness keeps getting emphasized. The candidate's hard failures on the other criteria keep getting referenced, but more abstractly. By step 74 of the run, the agent has rewritten every failed constraint into hedges. Close to range, conflicting evidence, approximate match. And it commits to the wrong answer with 65% confidence.
Memory-induced confirmation bias.
That's exactly what it is. And here's why it's structurally interesting and not just a bug. No individual step lied. The hub didn't fabricate. The agent didn't ignore an instruction. What happened is that natural language summarization is smoothing. Each time the hub restates the candidate's status, a small amount of contradiction gets softened. Fails criterion 7 becomes doesn't perfectly match criterion 7. And after enough hops, the only candidate matching 5 and 6, though fails 7 and 8, has hardened into the best match overall.
Like that intelligence brief problem where the first analyst writes, "Suspect X is our only candidate matching these two criteria, though fails the other two." Two analysts later, the brief reads, "Suspect X is our best match." Nobody lied. The summarization layer eroded the hard contradictions.
And here's the thing. That's not a tuning problem. That's the natural language summarization layer doing what language models do. They smooth. They reconcile. They make text feel coherent. Which is exactly what you don't want on a multi-constraint problem, where the right answer requires all the constraints to hold simultaneously.
The authors flag this honestly. They talk about wanting structured candidate state tracking. Basically, force the hub to maintain hard pass-fail tables on each constraint, separately from the prose summaries. And final answer gates that require the structured table to pass before commit. None of that is in the deployed system. As of this paper, the failure mode is a known property of exactly the kind of multi-constraint task this system is supposedly best at.
Which is the most important caveat in the paper, in my view. And it pairs with another honest moment, the one about the context window.
Walk me through that one.
So their deployed configuration triggers the hub to compress an agent's scratch pad when it hits 64,000 tokens inside a 128,000 token context. That's their headline number. That's what produced the 71 on browse comp. In the ablation, they show what happens if you trigger compression earlier, at 32,000 instead. The 32,000 version beats 64,000 on every aggregator they tested. 8 points on one metric, 13.5 on another, 8.5 on a third. Their published headline numbers are a lower bound.
Which is an unusual thing to find in a paper. You almost never see, "And by the way, our deployed config is meaningfully worse than this other config we also tested."
It's almost endearing, honestly, but it cuts both ways, because the comparison against baselines was made with a knowingly suboptimal version. If a skeptic asks, were the baselines similarly undertuned, or were they running closer to their own optima? That's a fair question, and the paper doesn't fully answer it.
Which is one of the right places to push? What are the other ones?
Three more. The benchmarks are small. 200 questions on browse comp and HLE, 100 on the scaling study, no confidence intervals. The authors acknowledge this and say bootstrap intervals are coming in the camera ready. But for now, some of the smaller gaps could be sampling noise. Second, the scaling axis saturates fast. Per agent accuracy plateaus by 5 agents. The team level accuracy keeps creeping up a bit. But the headline framing, scaling out as a real capability axis, sets up expectations of a curve that keeps going. What they have is a clean 1-5 lift. That's a useful lift. It's not an arbitrarily extensible scaling law. Third, on the heterogeneous team result, the one where weaker peers gain double-digit points and the strongest peer still gains some, there's a confound. When you add a stronger backbone to a team, of course the team improves. The question is how much of that improvement is the hub's coordination and how much is just, now there's a stronger agent in the room. A cleaner test would be heterogeneous teams without the hub. That comparison isn't in the paper.
All fair, and worth pairing those with what the authors got right that I want to come back to. The fact that weaker peers gain more from the hub than stronger peers, that's a finding I find genuinely satisfying. It's the study group asymmetry. When a strong student joins a study group with weaker students, the weaker students benefit a lot. The strong student benefits less, but still benefits some, because even weaker peers occasionally explore corners the strong student wouldn't have bothered with.
And nobody gets dragged down, which is the other thing worth noting. You might worry that mixing strong and weak agents would create a kind of regression to the mean. The strong agent gets pulled into the weak agent's dead ends. They don't find that. The strongest backbone in the heterogeneous team still gains a few points over running solo.
Which suggests the intent-driven reading is doing its job. The strong agent isn't being forced to absorb the weak agent's notes. It only pulls them when it judges them relevant to its current sub-goal.
Right. Selectivity is doing real work.
So where does this leave us? Eric, what's your read on what this paper actually demonstrates?
I think it demonstrates two things that are worth separating. The smaller claim is empirical. On three long-horizon search benchmarks, a peer-to-peer agent team with a trained communication layer outperforms both single agents and other multi-agent coordination schemes by a real margin. That's solid. It's running with a known suboptimal config and no confidence intervals. So the exact size of the margin is fuzzy, but the direction is clear. The bigger claim is conceptual, and it's the one I find more interesting. It's that the right axis to optimize when you already have strong agents might not be the agents themselves. It might be how they talk. And the way you get a good communication layer is not by writing clever prompts. It's by running reinforcement learning on outcomes and letting the reward signal teach a model what notes and readouts actually accelerate downstream success.
That's the part I keep turning over too. Because if it generalizes, it implies there's a whole subdiscipline that hasn't been built yet. Inter-agent communication as its own optimization target, with its own training data, its own reward shapes, its own failure modes, confirmation bias, premature convergence, diversity collapse, that look nothing like the failure modes of a single agent.
And we already see one of those failure modes in the Fort Henry case. The system can faithfully record contradictions and still rationalize them away through repeated summarization. That's a class of bug we haven't really had to debug before, because we haven't had systems that summarize each other's work in a loop.
It almost feels like a new kind of organism. Not a smarter individual agent, a new species of thing.
A team that learns how to be a team, while the members stay fixed.
The show notes have a link to the paper and some related reads if this episode caught you. And if you want the full transcript with the jargon defined in line, plus the concept pages that connect this to the other episodes we've done on agent coordination, that's all on paperdive.ai.
Thanks for listening to AI Papers, a deep dive.